Hi, everyone, and welcome to On The Box, the Geek Show's dedicated television podcast. I don't know why I said television like that, but television. There you go. More television.
I'm very Matt Berry and IT Crowd.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I think it's because I've been watching a lot of Matt Berry. I've been rewatching Toast of London, so...
I'm glad you clarified that. You're not, like, outside his house with a pair of binoculars.
No, I'm not. But yeah, just once more.
Trying to find where he lives.
Yeah, just once more. Television. I'm Rob, and I'm joined by the wonderful and the in stereo, Andrew.
Hooray, stereo. It's probably a good thing.
Andy, why didn't you say
hooray? Is it good, Rob? Is it good?
Yes, it was good. But Andy didn't say anything. I was hoping he'd say.
Yes.
See?
Well, I thought Andrew had a new name now.
We are not.
I thought it was Emerson.
No, we are not calling him Emerson Cummerbund this week.
I think we have an important announcement to make before the start of the show, and that is Emerson Cummerbund is dead.
Dun, dun, dun! Who did it? Find out next week.
So, you can find us online at thegeekshow.co.uk because we are part of the Geek Show podcast network, and on the site you can listen to all sorts of shows, not just this one. We've got Cinema Eclectica, Literary Loitering, Two Sweet Wrestling, and of course the Geek Show itself. And if you like what you hear, you can help support us by clicking the donate link on the right hand side of the website, or go into our GoFundMe page, or if you want something for your money, you can visit the Geek Shop and buy lots of lovely items. And if you want to get in contact, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or info@thegeekshow.co.uk. Boom. Blurbed.
So, Andy, we've been blurbed all over.
Yes.
Now it's time for the news.
Yes, well, I'll start on a light note today.
Will you?
Not that I don't on any other day. Well, you like your game shows, don't you, Rob? And don't you, Andrew?
No, hate game shows.
You hate it? Well... CBS in the US have commissioned the full series from Lionsgate TV of a game show based on Candy Crush Saga.
Wait.
That's why I hate game shows.
Wait a minute. I want to work this out. Right, so they based a game show on Candy Crush. So is this... Yes. People playing Candy Crush, or do they have a big grid with do they have a big grid with actual candy in? And in order to make the candy disappear, you have to match three or more. But when you match them, you basically have a time limit in which you have to eat all of the candy that you've matched. And if you can't manage it in that time, then that candy gets put back and you get sent to one side to try and recover from indigestion until the next round. And then at the end, everyone dies of diabetes.
I think that's just what happens when Saw gets his hands on it.
Well, it's an hour long, the hour long shows. It'll feature teams of two players competing against giant interactive game boards to defeat obstacles and move through various levels to be crowned Candy Crush Champion. And the show promises to offer a play-along option for viewers at home.
So, wait a minute. So, teams of two players. So, you and a friend get to take on another team of two players. Yeah?
Yeah.
But only one of you can be champion. So, does that mean you have a duel to the diabetic death?
Well, the winner gets the...
What's that? Whip out curly whirlies and start fencing with them.
Yes, fencing with curly whirlies. And I might call the episode Duel to the Diabetic Death. I don't know.
Wouldn't that be called, instead of Curly Whirly Fencing, just merge the words and have it called Curly Wensing?
No.
That's wrong.
Now there's an episode title.
Curly Wensing is just...
It's just wrong.
It is all kinds of wrong. Andrew, I told you, muzzle him before you let him out.
I'm sorry, you promised you would be a good boy this week.
But here's the best bit.
What?
I haven't said the best bit yet, right? Firstly, there's no word yet from CBS on a target premiere date. That's the important bit down.
Okay, yeah.
Now, the producer, well, the executive producer, is the same one that worked on ABC's Wipeout and NBC's Fear Factor. So this might be a giant game board that they actually have to go on themselves.
So, hang on, they worked on Wipeout and Fear Factor.
And Fear Factor. And they're both heavy, like, activity shows, aren't they?
Well, I've watched Wipeout, and it's basically a tame version of Takeshi's Castle. And I've watched Fear Factor, where somebody just runs around trying to scare people. And I'm not sure why Fear Factor was ever a thing. Did you guys ever watch it?
I saw a clip of it.
I think it's one of those things that sounds good in theory, but in practice you realise, like, 90% of the things you want to do, you actually can't because it would violate health and safety.
Yeah. Have you seen that game show that they have on, I think it's ITV, late at night? And it's called Release the Hounds or something like that.
Oh, yes. I've seen that on Gogglebox.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but they're not sicking actual bloodthirsty dogs on people.
No, but just the adrenaline rush of being chased by a few dogs like that right at the end, after you've been through this whole haunted house scenario.
And they are scary dogs. They're not like send like a pack of four poodles or something on them.
Although, if it was poodles, I would be terrified if I was being chased by, you know, bloodthirsty poodles.
What about a vicious pack of Yorkshire Terriers?
No, because, you know, there's never a vicious pack of Yorkies, you know, because I'm a man and it's a man's chocolate. Chihuahuas, on the other hand, you don't go near them.
Rob, Rob, Rob. Andrew, Andrew, Andrew.
Andy, Andy, Andy.
This article. This is good. You'll love this.
What?
Right? I'll read this bottom comment out, and then I'll go from there. Right. The comment on the bottom. I play Candy Crush Saga and Candy Crush Soda every day. I would certainly love to be considered one of the best contestants on the show. I am a 69-year-old woman and have too much free time on my hands. Being on a game show is right up my alley. Please consider me as a contestant. Not knowing that this is a website with just the article on and they're not actually talking to the show themselves.
Old people.
American people.
Old American people.
You mean Donald Trump?
I do mean Donald Trump.
Donald Trump?
Well caught, Rob.
Yes. Anyway, shall we move on?
Speaking of Donald Trump, so there have been some rumours going around.
Yes.
So, last Wednesday night, there was a presidential debate. Donald Trump, being Donald Trumpy, accused the media of rigging things for Crooked Hillary. So put, like, an alternative broadcast on his Facebook page with, like, Trump-styled political commentators and analysis, which, you know, certainly isn't biased in his favour.
No.
Fucking Trump. But this has sparked rumours that Donald Trump might be starting Trump TV, his own news channel.
See, you say Trump TV, but it sounds like a channel dedicated to the best farts in the world.
Yes, Rob. It is basically a camera in your room after you've had the beans and onions.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It just sounds like the same sort of thing as we have Trigger Happy TV, you know, but Donald Trump comes out at the end, like in a punk sort of way, you know. Surprise.
No, because the last thing we need now is punk Donald Trump. Punk Trump is not a thing we should be wishing for. We do not need the punk Trump.
Anyway, Andrew, what is this Trump TV?
Well, presumably it would be just a news channel showing news through the horrific, distorted lens of Donald Trump's madness. Finally, just a few days ago, the Financial Times reported that Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, had approached a top media dealmaker to discuss setting up a network after the presidential election. Because, I mean, he's going to need to do something, isn't he, when he inevitably loses?
Well, you know why he wants to set up Trump TV is so he can basically have his own beauty pageants. Because
I know what you meant, but my mind immediately just went to like a line of Donald Trump's all in bikinis.
Oh no! That's just put a really disturbing idea in my head there.
Quick, when this bleach your brain.
This Trump TV. This doesn't include, for example, like a giant hole in a wall that leads to his mind, does it?
This is not being John Malkovich. There is no scene where everybody is Donald Trump, including the sexy singer on top of the piano going, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. Although I imagine that is what it looks like in Donald Trump's head.
Yeah. Exactly that.
Exactly.
Can you imagine just like going inside his head, though? I bet it's sticky. Uncomfortably warm. Not just uncomfortably warm, but like warm in that really sort of damp heat kind of a way.
Yeah. Just off in the corner is Ivana going, I took half, Donald. Half.
But she's still the real loser because her name is Ivana Trump.
No. No, because they named their daughter Ivanka.
Oh, no.
Where were we? Yes, Donald Trump. The Donald. The Trump Master. Not a good idea to call him the Trump Master, is it?
Yeah.
That sounds like his ring name for a wrestling show.
The Trump Master. Do you remember Rikishi used to do the stink face?
The Trump face.
No, the Trump face. Don't. Too many options on the Trump face. And all of them look like he's just orgasmed. I'm not sure where we're going with this. Trump TV. Back to safer shores.
And yes.
I mean, it is kind of perfect for him.
It is.
Because it is perfect for all of us, really. It's like a happy compromise. He gets to spout off about how all the Mexicans are coming in and murdering everyone, but without the bit where he can like actually start a world war.
Hmm. It's like TV sectioning, isn't it? You're just sectioning them off that niche corner.
I love that. That's genius, Andy.
He's lost his slot on a major TV network, and now he's just... He sat in the corner, you know, doing his own thing.
No, can you imagine?
Not bothering anybody.
Can you imagine? You've just got all of the team are just professional nurses and they have specially designed padded sets. You know, everybody's wearing like business suits, but the business suits have really long sleeves that you can wrap around and give yourself a nice hug when you're feeling down.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm just going with your sectioning by TV. I think we need to leave that there for a little bit and move on to the Great British Bake Off.
Ah.
Yay, lovely Bake Off.
Well, kind of moving on to the Great British Bake Off because the BBC have announced a new TV show, a new cooking show that they've given the working title, apparently, as The Big Family Cooking Challenge. And they're going to see amateur families battle to become the nation's best home cooks. Each team is going to span the generations and judges are going to visit their homes to whittle down teams through challenges involving everyday meals. And the BBC's acting head of formats and features, Donna Clark, has said, I'm thrilled to be taking food competitions in a different direction. A passion for food starts in the family kitchen and this format will take us into homes up and down the country where we'll meet Britain's most passionate and exciting families of cooks. The show's ambition has been described as a feel-good show full of character and warmth with authentic home cooking at its heart. Now tell me if that doesn't sound like the Great British Bake Off.
See, what it sounds like to me is that basically she's been fired for losing the Bake Off.
Yeah.
And this is all a plan on her part, just go around to people's houses and get free meals.
Well, she's the acting head of formats and features, so the head of formats and features probably has gone, and so she's trying
who's going to host this?
Well, I don't know. See, this is the thing. this news article has Mary Berry's face all over it, but that's not going to say that Mary Berry is actually going to host it, and I don't think Mel and Sue are either. But the other thing that gets me is they're talking about going around the country to these amateur cooks, but there's been shows like that. There's shows like that already. Some of them are things like My Kitchen Rules, right? Some of them are the ones where they turn their house into a little restaurant. And then you have the real, real kind of scummy bottom of the barrel one, which I think is on Channel 4. You know, the one where they come dine with me. That's it.
Is that still going?
Yes. Because I have never seen every time there's an episode of Come Dine With Me on, I see a group of people who I really want to punch.
Come Dine With Me is less like a celebration of home cooking and more a bunch of people getting pissed on wine and bitching about each other.
And being nosy, looking through people's drawers and stuff.
I hope they'll let the people get out of their drawers first before they look through them. Because that could be...
It's true, though, isn't it?
See, part of me really wants to go and, like, come dine with me, and then the night before, like, just empty out all my wardrobes and just put, like, a bloodstained shirt with a knife in them. Like, as soon as they find it, just appear behind them and say, "You shouldn't have seen that."
Loads of traps in Home Alone style fashion.
No, because, well, number one, we're not Macaulay Culkin, so we wouldn't get away with it. Although, if we called our house the Fun House and we dressed like Pat Sharp, you know, then we may get away with it.
That's a very disturbing... I'd see your door saying, "Welcome to the Fun House."
Don't. There's...
It's fine, we'll just put like a nice friendly clown out front as well.
Yeah.
Everyone loves clowns.
You know Rob from Cinema Eclectica, he likes different types of music. He got me listening to a lot more hip-hop, and I was listening to an artist called Aesop Rock. He has a song called None Shall Pass, and one of the lines in the song really set me off because I couldn't tell what the hell he was talking about. The line is basically, "I will remember your name and face on the day that you were judged by the Funhouse cast." I was thinking, what? Because does that mean, like, Pat Sharp and the twins are going to be judge and jury? They're going to wear robes and the wig and they're judging me for something? Why are you judging me, Pat? Why? I haven't done anything to you. So, yeah, be careful of judgment of Pat Sharp.
Because he is a cruel and unforgiving judge.
Yes.
Wise words.
We don't know who's going to be hosting this show, but I don't know if...
It does sound very much like Mary Berry's kind of thing.
It does sound very much like Mary Berry's kind of thing, but I don't know if it's going to work with what BBC want. I think that for Mary Berry really thrive, I think it should be a baking show.
Depends as well.
She's done like some conventional cooking stuff in the past.
She's done a lot of conventional cooking stuff in the past, but I think everybody knows her primarily as a baker. I think a lot of it has come from the fact that historically we've related cooking in general more to Delia Smith on the BBC than we have Mary Berry. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, or it could just be that she was in that baking show, what was really popular.
No, that's generally what we think now, yeah. But, I mean, she's done various baking stuff. I think Mary's done a lot more baking-related stuff than general cooking.
It could be worse, though. You could have Anthony Worrell Thompson hosting it, and he'll only be nicking all your cheese.
What?
Oh, a double team.
That goes straight over your head there, Rob.
Yes, it did. I need to know what this is related to.
Well, a few years ago, he got caught shoplifting cheese.
Anthony Worrell Thompson?
Yeah.
Did you not know that, Rob?
No.
Like, all over the news.
Anthony Worrell Thompson stole cheese from somewhere.
Yeah.
Although, you say that, have you ever seen Andy and Anthony Worrell Thompson in the same room? Because I haven't.
Neither have I. You make a good point, Mr. Andrew.
We'll leave that there.
Anyway, moving on to actual Bake Off news, and the new host of Bake Off, or one of them, anyway, has been announced. And it's Ooh, Richard Ayoade.
I absolutely love Richard Ayoade. I think he's an amazing comedian. It just doesn't seem like his kind of thing.
No, it doesn't. And I've seen Richard Ayoade in so many things, and he's been middling in some of them, right? I'll be fair. But most of the time, he is brilliant. Gadget Man especially is one of the ones that I love seeing him in, because he's so very different, you know, and he's got such dry sarcasm. He kind of reminds me of you, Andrew, at times. I think
dry sarcasm just does not work with the Bake Off.
No, it doesn't. Because Mel and Sue worked with the Bake Off because they were like those cheeky little kids, you know, just running around going, "Ooh, what's that? Ooh, what's that? Can I have a bit of that? Oh, can I have that? Are you doing with that? Oh, what's this?" You know, that was Mel and Sue. And that worked with the Bake Off because you had Paul and Mary as kind of the parents who were controlling things and making sure Mel and Sue didn't actually run wild and, you know, start throwing tantrums in the aisles because they couldn't have, you know, they couldn't lick the spoon or something like that.
Like you even had slightly stern dad Paul Hollywood with lovely mum Mary Berry.
Yeah, that was literally it. That was
the whole dynamic.
Yeah, and that worked. You know, that really worked, and that fit. And I don't think the Bake Off with just Paul Hollywood and Richard Ayoade is going to work in the same way.
Yeah, I was going to say it'd be more like a father and son team, but I won't go that far.
Well, it's not that it's going to be more like a father and son team. It's like, you know, it's more like the bitter aftertaste after the divorce.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's father and son after mum has left.
Yeah.
Although Paul Hollywood isn't exactly what Richard Ayoade's dad I wouldn't picture.
I wouldn't picture him as Richard Ayoade's dad as well.
I can see this whole thing now of like Richard being the son who the father just doesn't understand. Like, he comes home at night and Paul Hollywood is all, "Damn it, son, why can't you just bake?" And Richard Ayoade's going to be like, "You don't get me, Dad."
You never know, though. They might just have that chemistry. You don't know until it happens, do you?
No. Well, I mean, if I imagine, it's not just going to be like the two of them, is it?
No, it's not.
So you're at least going to be like one or two more judges.
Well, we'd hope, but you know what these things tend to be like. We hope for something that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what we're going to get.
True. Plus, it might expose the fact that Paul Hollywood only knows how to make bread. And they'll just be stuck there going, "Yes, this cake is very cakey."
Well, he can make cake, but he doesn't have Mary Berry's knowledge when it comes to cake. You know, Mary Berry has... I would say Mary Berry's probably made almost every cake that you could name. Or at least, 80% to 85% of all the cakes that we know of, you know? But Paul Hollywood is nowhere near that level. But when it comes to bread, you know, bread is his expertise. That's what he loves to bake, isn't it?
All you'll be hearing from Paul Hollywood is, "That's a good bake. That's a good bake. Cut it in the middle. That's a good bake." That's all you hear now.
Yeah. He never goes around talking about soggy bottoms or anything like that, does he?
No.
Okay, maybe that's the cruel joke. That Paul Hollywood is like the one member of the old Bake Off they don't want to keep on. Because they've actually just built the Paultron 5000.
Yeah, he does have that slight Terminator thing about him, doesn't he? When he walks in, just goes, "Dun, dun, 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 dun." He has his own theme music. What was I going to say? You've distracted me with that now. All I can think about is Paul Hollywood as the Terminator.
Come with me if you want to bake.
Yes. My brain has gone off on one. Thank you so much, Andrew. I don't even remember what I was going to say now. It's just too good in my brain right now.
Shall we move on to the last story then?
Yes, let's move on to the last story.
Okay. So, this is a story coming out of Spain that two Spaniards, unsurprisingly, Victor Detena and Francesc Bonet, have created their own online streaming service called Napflix.
Napflix.
And it's amazing.
Okay.
It's basically a collection of the most boring internet clips they could find so that people can watch them in the afternoon when they're having their siesta, and that'll help them get to sleep.
Okay, now this is genius. That is actual genius level thinking. I'm amazed no one's actually done this before. This is too perfect.
Yes, so they've got like a whole list of stuff that people might find boring. Like they've got ballet recitals, ski jumping competitions, baseball, which to be fair is literally the most boring thing ever made.
You did say baseball.
Yes, baseball.
The spot where
videos of falling rain, rainy motorways, and best of all, cooking rotisserie chicken.
I have no words to actually respond to the last one.
This has got some educational elements to it.
Actually, no. Watching rotisserie chicken being cooked has no educational elements to it whatsoever. All you know from that is that someone's going to have a chicken dinner in the future.
No, if you watch the full thing, you'll know how long a rotate a chicken for over a skewer.
Yeah, but they don't show you the full thing. They show you it partway through when the chicken is nice and golden.
They show you the highlights.
Yeah. It's the highlights reel that you'll see. It's not the full thing.
Got my hopes up then.
Netflix is a pretty smart idea. Although, I will say, I think the application is fairly limited.
Well, there's quite a lot of boring things to watch.
There are quite a lot of boring things to watch. But I'm not sure. There's going to be people who look at Netflix and go, this is the place for all my interesting videos.
That'll be the revelation that you'll get, Robert, when me, you, or Andrew look at it and go, oh, I love that show, or I don't mind watching that. And then you go, oh, am I boring?
No.
This 10-hour-long footage of a stopwatch is actually fascinating.
Yeah. No, we will ask that am I boring question when we appear on Netflix. When we're sitting there going, yep, I like this, and this is good. And it is really interesting. And so, yeah.
So what?
My point exactly.
And that right there, Rob. Acting.
Yes. Acting. Sorry. I don't know where we're going with this. So, yeah. I used to have a lecturer in paleontology who spoke a bit like that. It was all monotone, very, very calm, and he used to talk like this all the time. Now imagine sitting in an hour-long lecture about paleontology, especially invertebrate paleontology, which is all about like insects and arthropods and stuff like that from millions of years ago, and someone's talking in this monotone voice about something so very, very boring in the first place. Could you stay awake?
I think he needs a starring role on Netflix.
Yes. I fell asleep in one of his lectures, and because I snore quite loud, the entire lecture stopped, and someone was actually coming to poke me with a ruler before I snored myself awake.
Well done, Rob.
Yes. So, anyway, Netflix. It's something that might be useful for siesta, might be useful for going to sleep at night. In fact, you know, damn it, why do I do this to myself?
What have you done now, Rob?
My brain has just gone on to American pharmaceutical ad for Netflix. Netflix can help you sleep. Use Netflix when you're having difficulty sleeping. Ask your doctor if you should try Netflix.
Who's going to say that?
Netflix is the right choice for you.
Yes. Netflix only has one side effect. And that is your boredom level. You may become more boring.
And a solid decrease in friends.
Yes.
Warning, do not watch Netflix if you have plans for the rest of the day.
Yes. Netflix should not be taken with food or alcohol because of a choking hazard. Falling asleep with half a hot dog in your face. So now, yeah, Netflix. the new tranquilizer.
And all of this, just like the pharmaceutical representative, just like walking through an office, and everyone is unconscious.
Yes,
just in front of Netflix.
And all you see is basically, you know, the ticking clock one that you were talking about. Yes.
Not be really funny.
What?
If it had a thing like an like a stop clock, like what Andrew mentioned, and it got right at the end and then just stopped and then went off, so you didn't get to see the end of it.
No, what would be funny is if
it just ended with like 1 second left.
Yeah.
On the
yeah.
Oh, that'd be sadistic.
Yeah. Or if during the advert the cameraman had to keep waking up the person doing the advert. Because they just fall asleep.
They accidentally caught like a bit of Netflix out the corner of their eye.
Yeah.
You're watching it, all you see is the camera fall on the floor.
Yeah. Well, like the end of Blair Witch Project. Yeah. Oh, we go down Netflix, the horror movie now. Oh, right. Okay. Let's take a break there. And we'll be back in a few moments.
The world of comics and manga are much, much more complex than I'll ever know. So tune in to 4Panel on the Geek Show Podcast Network to make that whole world a little less intimidating.
Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of On The Box. We now move on to what we've been watching after a disturbing first part there.
There wasn't anything disturbing about it. You can't prove anything.
There wasn't anything not disturbing about it. You can't prove anything there.
I'm confused. Yeah. I'm confused.
that's us told.
So, anyway, what's everyone been watching?
Who's going first?
So, me, maybe?
I don't know.
Go on then, Andrew.
Okay, well, kicking things off. This week, I've been watching a book.
Really?
Yep.
Was it on Netflix?
No, but that would be a good inclusion.
I've just gone down a different route with Netflix now, and I've gone down the route where you have an angry mother throwing soiled baby products at her cheating husband. It's called Nappy Flix.
that is horrifying.
Carry on,
Andrew. So this is a book we got sent in by Titan Books. It's Arrow, Oliver Queen's Dossier. It's been compiled by Nick Ayres.
Okay.
It's basically it's the sort of thing we cover quite a bit on Literary Loitering. It's one of those coffee table type books.
All right.
All right.
So just kind of a little look at some of the things from the TV show Arrow. It's kind of interesting because they've sort of gone all out with the theme. So the cover, it's made to look like kind of a leather pouch type thing.
Yeah.
Sort of a folder. Folder is the word. I have all the best words. So the general idea is this has been written by Oliver Queen for kind of in the event of his death to be sent out to someone to carry on his work as Arrow.
So it's more a last will and testament rather than a dossier.
No, because it's more of like a fact file on all the things he's done and all the people he's met up until now. So you've kind of got little bits on all the various enemies he's fought, kind of people like Black Canary and all that, what he's teamed up with. And personally, my favourite bit in stuff like this, we've got all the nerdy kind of technical specifications for things. So you've got like diagrams of his bow and sort of a list of all the different types of arrows he uses.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting like how closely they've stuck to a theme. So instead of being just kind of like a picture of something with like a text article, it's all made up of like various documents and newspaper clippings. So it is like all the villains, instead of just like, say, a wall of text about this is what happened in the episode they appeared in, kind of get like a police report recounting the events.
Okay, that's a nice approach, actually. And it just
it's quite cool.
Yeah, it does keep it in theme with the show itself as well. So, yeah, I like that.
Yeah, and that's quite neat. It's lots of various concept art for characters and things. There's even one bit I found quite interesting. Is actually at one point, had a piece of concept art for the Arrowmobile.
Really?
Which in the comics, Green Arrow used to have a car which was like a Batmobile ripoff called the Arrowmobile.
Yeah.
So you kind of got a bit of concept art for that, with kind of the in-universe justification that they'll be a bit too conspicuous. So he switched to a bike as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because Green Arrow's normally associated with the bike these days, isn't he?
Yeah. And also, surprisingly, for a book about Arrow, the sulkiest show on television,
yeah,
it's actually like a couple of fairly amusing bits. It's like on the Arrow bike, it's actually labelled Arrow bike. Like a little side comment of just, now they've got me doing the naming thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a running joke that, like, all of Oliver's friends refer to his stuff as the Arrow something.
Yeah. In the same way that Batman refers to all his stuff as the Bat something.
Yes, but that's just Batman. He's got a thing about bats.
Yeah, but Green Arrow seems to have a thing about bats as well, which is why he has an Arrow Cave, an Arrow Mobile.
Oh, no. I think he's just got a huge man crush on Batman.
Possibly, yeah. Oh, God. Can you imagine? He'd be one of the worst stalkers of all, especially for Batman.
How so?
He's dressed in bright green, so it's kind of hard for him to blend into an urban environment.
Yeah, but, well, number one, as Oliver Queen, he can go to all the best parties that Bruce Wayne would go to. Number two, as a member of the Justice League, he can go to all of the Justice League places that Batman would go to. Number three, he has very good tracking skills, maybe not on the level of Batman, but he could wander around Gotham stalking Batman from a distance. You know, Batman would then stalk him, and he'd like that because Batman is stalking him instead.
What a tease he is.
Yes, he is. You know? And he could just go to the bat signal and draw a little, a little heart with an arrow through it. Although Batman might take that the wrong way and think that he's an assassin trying to kill Batman.
This is a comic series so written.
That explains all the pages in the Arrow dossier of just Mrs. Oliver Batman.
Yes. Anyway, so the Arrow dossier.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty neat little coffee table book if you're interested in Arrow.
Are you interested in Arrow, though?
I am not interested in Arrow, to be honest.
See, it's that...
okay, dossier. That's not your fault.
See, the problem I have with Arrow is it started off really well. I liked the first season, right? I thought the first season, if they'd kept it like that, kept him as this guy who's going around, a vigilante who's going around killing criminals, right? That worked for me. That was fine. I was fine with that.
Because I think the main problem is just they had absolutely no idea what they wanted to do with it.
Yeah. And then you had season two, and all of a sudden, there's no consequences to him for killing all those people in season one.
It's fine, they were bad people.
See my point? It's basically the Death Note argument all over again. All bad people are criminals.
Rob.
Yeah?
Are you saying that Arrow reminds you of a manga you've read?
No, I'm saying that the argument in Death Note was literally all bad people are criminals, ergo all criminals are bad people. Do you see what I mean? And Arrow used exactly the same logic. And it's a very childish logic, and that's one of the reasons I stopped watching Arrow was because the childish logic. You know?
Punisher's the same thing, isn't it?
Punisher is the same thing, except Oliver Queen never really had a reason to... Okay, his dad died in that accident and everything like that, but he never really had a reason to take that level of vengeance. Punisher did. Frank Castle actually had what he thought was a justified reason to take that level of vengeance, because wasn't it his wife and kid were killed right in front of him?
Yeah, but Oliver Queen is all, I'm killing these people to make myself. Like, I don't see a difference. I don't tell you, you can argue that one guy's childish for being black and white morality, but another guy isn't, for having the exact same level of, these are bad people, I will kill all the bad people.
I think it's. I think part of it is because Arrow was. I think part of what I'm looking at from that is just the level of difference in terms of their TV presentation, rather than what they were like in the in the comic
books. Basically, the key difference is the Punisher isn't a whiny little child.
That's my point. The character of Oliver Queen, he is quite whiny. I didn't like that. You know, John Bernthal is just he is just the Punisher through and through. And I think in terms of the TV presentation, I much prefer the Punisher.
But I feel like John Bernthal just is actually the Punisher in his spare time.
He might be. We don't know. But anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, let us move on.
Do you want to go next, Andy, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll go next.
Okay.
Well, I've never thought I'd get to say that I've been watching this on the box. Well, I've been watching The Crystal Maze.
The Crystal Maze?
Yes.
I was worried where you were going when you said, I never thought I'd get to say I watch this on the box. I thought, he's not going to say porn, is he? So you've been watching The Crystal Maze?
Yes. Has either you or Andrew been watching this?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
No, I haven't had the opportunity yet.
Well, this was a one-off special for Stand Up Akanza, which is Friday. Well, today.
Yes, today is Friday.
Yeah, but this was for Stand Up Akanza, and it was on last Sunday, I think. And this was basically a celebrity special, a full hour-long special.
Yeah.
Of the Crystal Maze, filmed in the Crystal Maze Experience in London.
All right.
And it was a throwback to the original. Stephen Merchant hosted it.
Yeah.
But he shaved his head bald in true Richard O'Brien fashion. And also, Richard O'Brien was a part of the show by... He played the computer in the television. So it got a lot of nostalgic things right, so to speak.
Hang on. He played the computer in the television?
Yeah, there was like a television at the beginning. You know where usually when he goes to Futuristic Zone in the old one,
yeah,
you go computer.
Yeah.
He played the computer, but it was the television. But it was at the beginning of the Aztec Zone instead. So it's a bit muddled up, but it got there. But anyway, the celebrities included Rio Ferdinand. I say celebrities loosely. Michelle Keegan, Josh Riddicombe, and it was... Jordan Peacock. Is it Jordan Peacock? I'm not sure. John Peacock, the Paralympian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was... I forgot the other one. But anyway, that's not important. The games were as brilliant as they were in the 1990s, basically. You had your four zones. It was Industrial Zone. It wasn't Ocean World Zone, so it was old school. You had a picture of Ed Tudor Paul on the wall while they were talking, so that was a good throwback.
Okay.
But yeah, it all culminated as it was in the Crystal Dome. It was an amazing show to watch.
Okay. I was just a bit concerned about Richard O'Brien being the computer in the TV, because it made him sound a bit like... Remember Games Master with Patrick Moore?
Ish, I think.
So I was just worried that they were going to do some weird cosmic crossover where you had a giant floating Richard O'Brien head telling people what they should and shouldn't do in each challenge.
Although Richard O'Brien did say to Stephen Merchant that he was expecting the one who played Doctor Who to host it. So it was a nice dig to David Tennant in there. David Tennant.
Okay.
He was supposed to host it, wasn't he?
Ah, I see. Well, did he not want to shave his hair off? So what does a bald Stephen Merchant actually look like?
Well, looks a bit like Harry Hill, to be honest.
What?
yeah, he looks like same glasses, Harry Hill and everything.
Same colour?
Yep, so to speak. It's very, very disturbing, to be fair.
Oh my God, it does look like someone put Harry Hill on a rack. Stretched him out a bit.
Okay.
But anyway, it was a really good show. I think it got everything right. If it brought it back for a full series,
yeah,
that aren't all celebrities, I think it'll do pretty well. It was a really good thing to watch. Obviously a lot lower budget compared to the original, with it being at the Crystal Maze Experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. Oh, and Mumsy was back as well.
Mumsy was back as well. Oh my God, I've just found a picture of... Yeah, he is Harry Hill. Oh, he's so Harry Hill. It's actually quite scary.
He is very, very Harry Hill-like, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised at how much he looks like Harry Hill. You're absolutely right, Andrew.
If you're looking at the picture where he's holding the crystal, like in the crystal dome itself, it looks even more scarily like Harry Hill. But yeah, it was a really good show. It brought back the nostalgia and also added a little bit of modern twist to it.
Yeah.
The games are exactly the same, so that was a good sign. You had all your classic automatic lock-ins, your mysteries, your riddles, everything like that, and Stephen Merchant's attempt at Richard O'Brien comedy as sarcastic digs and things like that. It really went well, and I was surprised. I was expecting it to be nowhere near as good as I remember.
Do you know, I've just had a thought. If they ever brought back the Crystal Maze as a proper TV series, Andrew, what do you think? Who'd be a good host? Because for some reason I've got Richard E. Grant in my head as the host of the Crystal Maze.
He would be pretty good. But then what we could do with Stephen Merchant, just like lock him in one of the rooms.
Just keep him for emergencies.
You know who I'd think? And this isn't being a funny answer. I'm being serious.
Okay.
Matt Berry.
Matt Berry would work as well.
He'd be really good at distracting them as well.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons I went with Richard E. Grant, because, you know, if you go with all the weird costumes as well, I think Richard E. Grant could pull them off, but Matt Berry as well could pull them off.
Yep. Either of them, you wouldn't even need any costume budget. They would just wear their own clothes.
Yeah, they're just flamboyant like that.
Richard E. Grant could just play Mumsy.
No, he'd just play. He'd just play himself. Literally, that's all he'd need to do is just, "Hi, I'm Richard E. Grant, and today I'll be playing the role of Richard E. Grant. Prepare for fireworks." I think either Richard E. Grant or Matt Berry, they would be totally suitable. I'm not sure about David Tennant, I've got to be honest. After seeing Broadchurch, I'm just not sure about him. I think everyone's a bit too hung up on how he was as the Doctor and has forgotten that he's done some serious acting since then.
But what if he did it as the Purple Man?
That's a tough one. Now you got me. But then again, he could get away with it because, as the Purple Man, he did like telling people what to do.
Exactly. He would tell them to go in the rooms, and then they would have to.
Yep. And they would have to solve his puzzles, otherwise they would get locked in, trapped forever under his control. Have we just made a more sinister version of the Crystal Maze?
I don't like it. It's too creepy now. It's very creepy, Crystal Maze.
Right, okay. So shall we move on to me then?
We shall move on to you.
And for me, I've been watching an American comedy show on Comedy Central. And remember The Daily Show with Jon Stewart?
Mm-hmm.
Right. There were two people on The Daily Show who now have their own individual shows, Stephen Colbert and John Oliver. And both of them have basically... John Oliver is obviously a British guy in America, and he's a stand-up comic, and now he's got a show of his own called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. You know, it's kind of a spin-off of The Daily Show. It's... what's the word I'm looking for? Because he used to be one of the writers, I think, on The Daily Show. And he's got a certain sense of humour, but I think he sharpened his talents with The Daily Show and then went on to do Last Week Tonight. And I've been watching a lot of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And it's weird how you have a completely British perspective on things that are going on in America. You know, it's not something that you normally see outside of the news. But the writing on Last Week Tonight is really, really clever and really sharp. I think in their second ever show, they decided to do a show about the death penalty, right?
Ooh.
Yeah, the death penalty. But they sweetened the deal with a clip of a tiny hamster eating a tiny burrito. And the idea was, if you stuck through that section on the death penalty, you got to see the clip of the tiny hamster eating a tiny burrito. And that's the kind of thing that they do. John Oliver is one of those, because he's English, right? He's not afraid to call out certain American personalities like Donald Trump. And because it's a comedy show, he's okay to do that in the name of satire. He's not really going to get sued for it for saying anything libelous, because it's going to be classified in the category of humor, right?
Mm.
But the interesting thing about Last Week Tonight is just the barrage of jokes, the way they managed to work all of these quite important points into a joke. And it kind of reminds me of, do you remember Omid Jalili?
Oh, yes.
Right. Andrew, do you know the bit I'm going to be talking about now with Omid Jalili?
Not really.
Because I think it's one of your favourite bits where he tells a racially insensitive joke and then belly dances.
Oh, yes.
And Last Week Tonight seems to be the epitome of that, but with serious topics. So they'll do a serious topic and then it's as though John Oliver is metaphorically belly dancing, you know. And it's literally that. They'll do serious bit joke, serious bit joke, serious bit joke, serious bit joke. And it shouldn't work, but it really does. It's really entertaining. One of the other bits that they've got on the show, though, is this, how is this still a thing? And some of the stuff that they come up with is just, I don't know who's researching this, but I would have them on the same level as the QI elves for the amount of detail in their research. They've had some fantastic ones like Ayn Rand. How is Ayn Rand still a thing? Or Ayn Rand, or however you want to pronounce her name. You know, they're asking, how is Ayn Rand still a thing? How is Columbus Day still a thing? Because Columbus Day is celebrating the day when a European came to America and discovered America, even though millions of people were already living there, and it had been discovered centuries before by the Vikings. So how could it be discovered by another European person? And when he came here, he basically slaughtered loads of people, but we're celebrating that with Columbus Day. Why are we doing this? How is it still a thing? And does it in a really humorous way that really gets you thinking, well, yeah, why is it still a thing? Mm. So it's not just, you know, John Oliver on his own, but John Oliver is kind of the main reason why you watch this show, because he's so animated. And I think a lot of that is stuff he's picked up from Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. You know, the way that he uses hands a lot, he uses his facial expressions a lot, he does weird noises and stuff like that. And it's really strange because it shouldn't work. If we had somebody as animated as that on British TV, right, I think that it wouldn't be as popular as it would be in, say, America. I've watched, Celebrity Juice, is it, with Keith Lemon?
Yes.
You know, he's animated to a degree, to almost the same level as John Oliver. And Alan Carr does the same thing, but they're nowhere near as popular as John Oliver is. Mm. You know, and John Oliver's got a lot of popularity online because Last Week Tonight comes out on YouTube as well, and they do a lot of YouTube-exclusive clips. And that's one of the interesting things, again, about the show, is there's a lot of stuff around the main show that's on Comedy Central. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's outside of the show that you could reference. And then when you go back and you watch the main show, they might reference other stuff from the web part or something like that. So you have this kind of weird continuity running throughout the entire series and running throughout, you know, just the entirety of the show itself. Yeah, and John Oliver's a really good host because he's got that weird self-deprecating humor that Brits tend to have, where we take the mickey out of ourselves as much as we take the mickey out of everybody else.
Yeah.
Basically, it sounds like he's successful because he can combine sort of the best of British and American humour. So yeah. Appeal to everyone's sensibilities.
Yeah, but he's also delivering sometimes really important messages and getting people who don't normally watch the news to actually watch the news. And I think that's one of the biggest miracles of the show. If you watch Last Week Tonight just on TV, you don't really get the full effect. If you go onto something like YouTube, though, and you go to one of their videos on YouTube, one of the clips from the show, and then you go through the YouTube comments, right? Yeah. That's where you actually see the full effect of last week tonight, because there's always hundreds and hundreds of comments, and a lot of them are, I was not aware of this. Why wasn't this reported on the news? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, sounds different, and it sounds really good, actually.
It is really good. It's because, I recommend it. It's great. I mean, John Oliver's the guy who did that piece on Donald Trump way back when Donald Trump announced that he wanted to be president of the United States. And John Oliver did that piece that went viral across the internet about Donald Trump's name and about how Donald Trump wanted to get rid of all foreigners. And he found out, well, the researchers on Last Week Tonight found out that Donald Trump's granddad or great-granddad had actually changed the name, the family name, from Drumpf to Trump. So his real name should have been Donald Drumpf. And so the Last Week Tonight show and John Oliver launched a campaign for Donald Trump to change his name back to Drumpf to signify his foreign origins. Yeah, and things like that. He's really got it in for Donald Trump. He really doesn't like Donald Trump at all, by the way.
For good reason.
Thing is, he's not biased towards Hillary either. One of the episodes, he actually made the point where WikiLeaks was coming out with all of this pretty damning stuff about Hillary Clinton and, you know, the early part of the campaign and everything like that, and these emails and these, all these conversations with the DNC and stuff like that. But all of the news headlines were basically about Donald Trump and about the charges that were leveled about him. And he's one of the few, and I hesitate to call him journalist because he doesn't really think he's a journalist, but he does say that he's a journalist, but not at the same time. But he's one of the few who actually acknowledged the fact that there were two stories going on, but only one of them was actively getting reported in the news. And I think that's the main thing about Last Week Tonight that I like. It is a news show, but it's a news show with swearing and comedy. And I wish more news shows were like that, because there's a certain honesty about it. Anyway, Last Week Tonight, I recommend it. So, I think we're at the end of the show.
Yep, yes we are.
It's been a very, very disturbing show this week.
Yes it has. We'll be back with more television goodness and various TV things. But until then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.